Chapter 57. The nearest hills, as if uncertain of their course, suddenly poised themselves upon the wing, and skimmed down the long vista of some opening valley, with the speed of light itself. By degrees, the prospect receded more and more on either hand, and as they had been shut out from rich and extensive scenery, so they emerged once again upon the open country. The knowledge that they were drawing near their place of destination gave them fresh courage to proceed. But the way had been difficult, and they had loitered on the road, and Smike was tired. Thus, twilight had already closed in, when they turned off the path to the door of a roadside inn, yet 12 miles short of Portsmouth. 12 miles, apostrophe said Nicholas, leaning with both hands on his stick, and looking doubtfully at Smike. 12 long miles, apostrophe repeated the landlord. Is it a good road? ' inquired Nicholas. Very bad, ' said the landlord. As of course, being a landlord, he would say. I want to get on, ' observed Nicholas, hesitating. I scarcely know what to do. ' Don't let me influence you, ' rejoined the landlord. I wouldn't go on, if it was me. ' Wouldn't you? ' asked Nicholas, with the same uncertainty. Not if I knew when I was well off, ' said the landlord. And having said it, he pulled up his apron, put his hands into his pockets, and, taking a step or two outside the door, looked down the dark road with an assumption of great indifference. A glance at the toil-worn face of Smike determined Nicholas, so without any further consideration he made up his mind to stay where he was. The landlord led them into the kitchen, and as there was a good fire he remarked that it was very cold. If there had happened to be a bad one he would have observed that it was very warm. What can you give us for supper? ' was Nicholas's natural question. Why, what would you like? ' was the landlord's no less natural answer. Nicholas suggested cold meat, but there was no cold meat poached eggs, but there were no eggs mutton chops, but there wasn't a mutton chop within 3 miles, though there had been more last week than they knew what to do with, and would be an extraordinary supply the day after tomorrow. Then, ' said Nicholas, I must leave it entirely to you, as I would have done, at first, if you had allowed me. ' Why, then I'll tell you what, ' rejoined the landlord. There's a gentleman in the parlor that's ordered a hot beefsteak pudding and potatoes, at 9. There's more of it than he can manage, and I have very little doubt that if I ask leave, you can sup with him. I'll do that, in a minute. ' said Nicholas, detaining him. I would rather not. I at least saw, why cannot I speak out? Here, you see that I am traveling in a very humble manner, and have made my way hither on foot. It is more than probable, I think, that the gentleman may not relish my company, and although I am the mouldy figure you see, I am too proud to thrust myself into his. ' Lord love you, ' said the landlord, it's only Mr. Crummles. He isn't particular. ' Is he not? ' asked Nicholas, on whose mind, to tell the truth, the prospect of the savory pudding was making some impression. Not he, ' replied the landlord. He'll like your way of talking, I know. But we'll soon see all about that. Just wait a minute. The landlord hurried into the parlor, without staying for further permission, nor did Nicholas strive to prevent him. Wisely considering that supper, under the circumstances, was too serious a matter to be trifled with. It was not long before the host returned, in a condition of much excitement. All right, he said in a low voice. I knew he would. You'll see something rather worth seeing, in there. Ecod, how they are a-going of it. There was no time to inquire to what this exclamation, which was delivered in a very rapturous tone, referred. For he had already thrown open the door of the room, into which Nicholas, followed by Smike with a bundle on his shoulder, he carried it about with him as vigilantly as if it had been a sack of gold, straightway repaired. Nicholas was prepared for something odd, but not for something quite so odd as the sight he encountered. At the upper end of the room were a couple of boys, one of them very tall, and the other very short, both dressed as sailors, or at least as theatrical sailors, with belts, buckles, pigtails, and pistols, complete fighting what is called in playbills a terrific combat, with two of those short broadswords with basket hilts which are commonly used at our minor theaters. The short boy had gained a great advantage over the tall boy, who was reduced to mortal strait, and both were overlooked by a large heavy man, perched against the corner of a table, who emphatically adjured them to strike a little more fire out of the swords, and they couldn't fail to bring the house down, on the very first night. Mr. Vincent Crummles, apostrophe said the landlord with an air of great deference. This is the young gentleman. Apostrophe, Mr. Vincent Crummles received Nicholas with an inclination of the head, something between the courtesy of a Roman emperor and the nod of a pot companion, and bade the landlord shut the door and beckon. There's a picture, apostrophe said Mr. Crummles, motioning Nicholas not to advance and spoil it. The little un has him. If the big un doesn't knock under, in 3 seconds, he's a dead man. Do that again, boys. Apostrophe, the two combatants went to work afresh, and chopped away until the swords emitted a shower of sparks. To the great satisfaction of Mr. Crummles, who appeared to consider this a very great point indeed. The engagement commenced with about 200 chops administered by the short sailor and the tall sailor alternately, without producing any particular result, until the short sailor was chopped down on one knee. But this was nothing to him, for he worked himself about on the one knee with the assistance of his left hand, and fought most desperately until the tall sailor chopped his sword out of his grasp. Now, the inference was, that the short sailor, reduced to this extremity, would give in at once and cry quarter, but, instead of that, he all of a sudden, drew a large pistol from his belt, and presented it at the face of the tall sailor, who was so overcome at this, not expecting it, that he let the short sailor pick up his sword and begin again. Then, the chopping recommenced, and a variety of fancy chops were administered on both sides, such as chops dealt with the left hand, and under the leg, and over the right shoulder, and over the left. And when the short sailor made a vigorous cut at the tall sailor's legs, which would have shaved them clean off, if it had taken effect, the tall sailor jumped over the short sailor's sword, wherefore to balance the matter, and make it all fair, the tall sailor administered the same cut, and the short sailor jumped over his sword. After this, there was a good deal of dodging about, and hitching up of the inexpressibles, in the absence of braces, and then the short sailor, who was the moral character evidently, for he always had the best of it, made a violent demonstration, and closed with the tall sailor, who, after a few unavailing struggles, went down, and expired in great torture as the short sailor put his foot upon his breast, and bored a hole in him through and through. That'll be a double encore, if you take care, boys, apostrophe said Mr. Crummles. You had better get your wind now, and change your clothes. Apostrophe, having addressed these words to the combatants, he saluted Nicholas, who then observed that the face of Mr. Crummles was quite proportionate in size to his body, that he had a very full underlip, a hoarse voice, as though he were in the habit of shouting very much, and very short black hair, shaved off nearly to the crown of his head, to admit, as he afterwards learned, of his more easily wearing character wigs of any shape or pattern. What did you think of that, sir? Apostrophe, apostrophe, inquired Mr. Crummles. Very good, indeed capital, apostrophe, answered Nicholas. You won't see such boys as those very often, I think, apostrophe said Mr. Crummles. Nicholas assented, observing that if they were a little better match, apostrophe, apostrophe cried Mr. Crummles. I mean if they were a little more of a size, apostrophe said Nicholas, explaining himself. Size. Apostrophe apostrophe repeated Mr. Crummles. Why, it's the essence of the combat, that there should be a foot or two between them. How are you to get up the sympathies of the audience in a legitimate manner, if there isn't a little man contending against a big one? Unless there's at least 5-1, and we haven't hands enough for that business in our company. Apostrophe, I see, apostrophe replied Nicholas. I beg your pardon. That didn't occur to me, I confess. Apostrophe, it's the main point, apostrophe said Mr. Crummles. I open at Portsmouth the day after tomorrow. If you're going there, look into the theater, and see how that'll tell. Apostrophe, Nicholas promised to do so, if he could, and drawing a chair near the fire, fell into conversation with the manager at once. He was very talkative and communicative, stimulated perhaps, not only by his natural disposition, but by the spirits and water he sipped very plentifully, or the snuff he took in large quantities from a piece of whitey brown paper in his waistcoat pocket. He laid open his affairs without the smallest reserve, and descanted at some length upon the merits of his company, and the acquirements of his family, of both of which, the two broadsword boys formed an honorable portion. There was to be a gathering, it seemed, of the different ladies and gentlemen at Portsmouth on the morrow, whither the father and sons were proceeding, not for the regular season, but in the course of a wandering speculation, after fulfilling an engagement at Guildford with the greatest applause. You are going that way? Apostrophe apostrophe asked the manager. Yes, apostrophe said Nicholas. Yes, I am. Apostrophe, do you know the town at all? Apostrophe apostrophe inquired the manager, who seemed to consider himself entitled to the same degree of confidence as he had himself exhibited. No, apostrophe replied Nicholas. Never there? Apostrophe apostrophe, never. Apostrophe, Mr. Vincent Crummles gave a short dry cough, as much as to say, if you won't be communicative, you won't. Apostrophe and took so many pinches of snuff from the piece of paper, one after another, that Nicholas quite wondered where it all went to. While he was thus engaged, Mr. Crummles looked, from time to time, with great interest at Smike, with whom he had appeared considerably struck from the first. He had now fallen asleep, and was nodding in his chair. Excuse my saying so, apostrophe said the manager, leaning over to Nicholas, and sinking his voice, but what a capital countenance your friend has got. Apostrophe apostrophe, poor fellow. Apostrophe apostrophe said Nicholas, with a half smile, I wish it were a little more plump, and less haggard. Apostrophe, plump. Apostrophe apostrophe exclaimed the manager, quite horrified, you'd spoil it forever. Apostrophe, do you think so? Apostrophe apostrophe, think so, sir. Why, as he is now, apostrophe said the manager, striking his knee emphatically, without a pad upon his body, and hardly a touch of paint upon his face, he'd make such an actor for the starved business as was never seen in this country. Only let him be tolerably well up in the apothecary in Romeo and Juliet, with the slightest possible dab of red on the tip of his nose, and he'd be certain of 3 rounds the moment he put his head out of the practicable door in the front grooves. O.P. apostrophe, you view him with a professional eye, apostrophe said Nicholas, laughing. And well I may, apostrophe rejoined the manager. I never saw a young fellow so regularly cut out for that line, since I've been in the profession. And I played the heavy children, when I was 18 months old. Apostrophe, the appearance of the beefsteak pudding, which came in simultaneously with the junior Vincent Crumleys's, turned the conversation to other matters, and indeed, for a time, stopped it altogether. These two young gentlemen wielded their knives and forks with scarcely less address than their broadswords, and as the whole party were quite as sharp set as either class of weapons, there was no time for talking until the supper had been disposed of. The master Kremlizes had no sooner swallowed the last procurable morsel of food than they evinced, by various half-suppressed yawns and stretchings of their limbs, an obvious inclination to retire for the night, which Smike had betrayed still more strongly. He having, in the course of the meal, fallen asleep several times, while in the very act of eating. Nicholas therefore proposed that they should break up at once, but the manager would by no means hear of it, vowing that he had promised himself the pleasure of inviting his new acquaintance to share a bowl of punch, and that if he declined, he should deem it very unhandsome behavior. "Let them go," said Mr. Vincent Crummles, "and we'll have it snugly and cozily together by the fire." Nicholas was not much disposed to sleep, being in truth too anxious, so, after a little demur, he accepted the offer, and having exchanged a shake of the hand with the young Crumleses, and the manager having on his part bestowed a most affectionate benediction on Smike, he sat himself down opposite to that gentleman by the fireside, to assist in emptying the bowl, which soon afterwards appeared, steaming in a manner which was quite exhilarating to behold, and sending forth a most grateful and inviting fragrance. But, despite the punch and the manager, who told a variety of stories, and smoked tobacco from a pipe, and inhaled it in the shape of snuff, with a most astonishing power, Nicholas was absent and dispirited. His thoughts were in his old home, and when they reverted to his present condition, the uncertainty of the morrow cast a gloom upon him, which his utmost efforts were unable to dispel. His attention wandered. Although he heard the manager's voice, he was deaf to what he said. And when Mr. Vincent Crummles, Gutenberg edition, end of chapter.